Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock, and welcome to my lifestyle podcast, Live Without a Net. The podcast showcases people who live fearlessly and have the ambition to create something. I'll showcase change makers who have decided to let go of their safety net in order to survive. So let's jump right in. Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock. Welcome to Live Without a Net. I'm with the CEO and founder of Bio Accelerator, Eric Stoffers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course. So Bio Accelerator is an advanced stem cell therapy company. And I want to talk about all of what you do, because I know it's, like you had said in our previous talks, it's well ahead of what's happening here in the United States. But first, let's dive into your background and who you are and where you came from and how you got into this exciting field.
Ah, cool. Okay. Well, so I'm Eric Stoffers, as you said. I am born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, the greater Phoenix area. I've lived in many of the cities surrounding, but essentially I've lived there the majority of my life. And I founded this particular company after being in the real estate business. So previous to getting into the medical business, I was in several different facets of real estate. I started off as an agent, just selling homes. And then I started in on the investment side, mostly focusing on single family homes. I ended up co-founding a company called American Housing Income Trust. We are a small real estate investment trust focused on single family homes. So I was the CEO of that company before I was blessed to come across this group of stem cell scientists that really taught me that, you know, giving back to my community and being a part of the medical industry was going to turn out to be the passion of my life.
Yeah, because that's quite a twist of a career to go from real estate to stem cell therapy. Did you have to learn a lot to get into that field, or was it something you just became so passionate about?
It was a little bit of both. Certainly, I'm learning every day. It's good. You know, as an entrepreneur, a lot of times I'll talk about some of the keys to success. And I personally think that if you're continuously the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong rooms. You're not going to grow. And I am both blessed and cursed at the same time. I'm now typically not even close to the smartest person in the room. And you know, I'm working with high-level PhDs, microbiologists, protein bacteriologists, medical doctors that are neurosurgeons and epidemiologists and you know, orthopedic surgeons. And so those are the rooms that I'm in every day. So I'm continuously learning, even though I've been running this advanced cell company for close to a decade now. But yeah, I had a long learning curve. And it has also, to your point, turned into my total passion. I get up every day. I'm blessed not only to be alive, but to be doing what I'm doing and helping people. And that has turned out accidentally to be my purpose in life.
So being a successful CEO like you are, what kind of tools did you need to be able to handle, you know, managing all these employees and meeting all of these professionals from all across fields to kind of be able to handle all the day-to-day tasks and what's involved? Like, what kind of skill set maybe did you learn growing up that helps you now?
Good question. I can certainly lean on aspects of my real estate career and dealing with the emotional and professional aspect of real estate. Meaning when people are selling their homes, that is an emotional experience for most people. Investors aside, obviously investors, it's a financial transaction, but so that I can lean on some of what I learned in real estate, but what I think I should take you back to is actually much more important. And that's my time in the restaurant business. I would say that my time in the restaurant business taught me the majority of what I needed to know, from managing people to dealing with all different walks of life. I kind of think that everybody at some point as a youngster should be in the restaurant business, because everybody eats. Yeah, you have to eat. And so depending on which restaurant you're in, you typically deal with a very wide variety of people, ethnicities, backgrounds, temperaments. And so you have to be kind of a quick study to succeed in the restaurant business. And then for me, I've always, as my parents would say, been a worker. You know, I always really kind of excelled in my workplace, but it was because I poured pretty much everything I had into it. And so I excelled through the restaurant business in every single capacity, being from my very first job as a busboy, you know, a dishwasher, busboy, to all the way through being, you know, the GM of multiple locations and opening restaurants. So I also had to manage a lot of people. And there's not a tougher business on the planet. Very, very low margins. There's always another new restaurant popping up next to you. everybody has recipes, you know, everybody has the newest, greatest recipe. And it's really hard to do a new variation of some dish to really drive traffic. You have to become a good marketer, great service. But then when you're dealing with employees, these are people that are typically in a different career or striving to get their education to be in a different career. Very rarely do you have people that are working in that industry that really care about putting their best into that industry. A lot of times it's, people that are just coming off of a full day at university or a full day at their other job. And so this is really an afterthought, and managing those type of people, it's not an easy thing to do. So perfecting that has made it an easy transition for me.
I would agree with you. Just being in PR, I've opened a lot of restaurants, and I think hospitality or being a general manager is one of the hardest jobs because you have to be on top of everything, the employees, make sure it's clean, make sure the drinks are poured right, make sure the food comes out correctly, and then the complaints will come to you on top of it. I don't know how you slept because I see it so many times. And yeah, and I could see how it's high turnover. I mean, I used to waitress and bartend, and it wasn't a career path for me, but I mean, I loved bartending, I should say. Being a waitress was hard because you get people who are hard on you and they just only think about the moment, and you're just supposed to serve them instead of thinking about you as a person.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I was a bartender for a long time too. And then that was fun. And you had a little bit more control and people were in front of you. And so if there was a mistake, you could fix it immediately. And, there's a lot of aspects to it that make it a little bit easier than serving. But I also was a server, and that was tough. Really tough.
It's really tough. So I wouldn't want to go back to that.
Yeah, me either. Plus, you give up your nights, your weekends, your holidays. So it's a tough quality of life. You can't have a good work-life balance. And so that, for that reason, I wouldn't recommend being in it for a long time, but I definitely recommend being in it for some time.
I agree, because I always say sink or swim. And I think of when I first bartended, I was in college and the owner of the bar just gave me a shot, but he didn't train me. So he just put me in the fire. So I remember I made this SoCo and lime drink, but I just like poured it in one of those mixers, like SoCo and lime. And someone behind the bar, not behind the bar, like a customer said to me, you have to shake that up in ice. So it's like, I learned as I went, but I thought it was the best way to learn ever. So I always use
from
that.
From the customers.
Yes. They were nice.
Imagine another business where the customer has to teach you and you're going to still thrive in the business.
Right.
Not many. Yeah.
Not many. You're so right. But I mean, I give you credit because going from and opening different restaurants with different menus and trying to keep it exciting, because you're basically also being a marketer to make it enticing for people to come in the door and always thinking of ways like how to beat your competitor down the street.
100%. I got lucky in the sense that, I had some of my early restaurant tenure in the low level jobs as starting as a 15-year-old kid. Like I said before, dishwasher, busser, all the way up into bartender and then manager and then GM and opening up multiple restaurants. But I was lucky in the sense that I lived in Arizona, and there's this little restaurant that opened up by Fashion Square Mall in Scottsdale. There was a new concept and it was very busy, and we ended up being able to get a lot of experience by opening many, many restaurants across the country, and it's called P.F. Chang's. So, we went from one restaurant in Scottsdale to hundreds of restaurants. And I got to be a part of that travel team where I got to go open many, many different restaurants for them. So I had a lot of experience from really, really good restaurant tours that helped me kind of catapult my tenure in the restaurant business.
Good for you. And that was before you got into real estate?
Oh, yeah. 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 I was still a kid. I was in my 20s.
Fun. Well, I'm sure it was a great time because you got to travel and learn so much about people and managing people and everything about restaurants, which is a ton because I've seen it.
Yeah. It was both fun and exhilarating and a real pain in the butt because it was, a tough quality of life and hard work.
It really is. I give credit to people who are lifers in the business. Like you said, there aren't many, but there are some.
I just ran into, so there's a restaurant that's connected to my corporate office in Scottsdale. And after work one day, I was leaving the office around 7:30. And, I was the last one there, turned off the lights, walked just downstairs where this little local restaurant was. And I sat down and somebody said, Eric Stauffers, is that you? And I kind of looked, and it was somebody that I had served tables with, like 20 years, 30, 25, maybe more years ago. So there's definitely those people out there that can make a living out of it. And when you get to higher echelon restaurants, it's actually a pretty decent living, but you got to work hard to get there.
Absolutely, because there's so few of those coveted positions. Well, let's transition into more of BioAccelerator and stem cell therapy. I've listened to it on podcasts. I'm sure people listening have heard about it. How would you describe it, and how can you explain how it will help people in the future?
Yeah, sure. So the most simplistic way to describe what we do and the hot button term that people are going to recognize is stem cell therapy. And you said it at the beginning, we're an advanced stem cell therapy clinic. That is really our core competency. But for those geeks out there, I'll go a little bit deeper. And we're not just a stem cell company. We produce our own lines of other advanced cell therapies. So some of those are in extracellular vesicles like exosomes, which is also a biologic that we combine with our stem cell therapies. And there's many, many other technologies that are in our pipeline. But what we focus on right now is the use of mesenchymal stem cells. Now, I say it the way that a lot of English speakers say it, but you've also probably heard it called as mesenchymal stem cells or stromal cells. That is the base of what we do. And what we treat is three major components. Autoimmune disease is one of them. So diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, tons of rare autoimmune disease. Unfortunately, in the United States, the trajectory of autoimmune disease is just skyrocketing right now. Good for our business, really bad for the American people. So that is one of our focuses. The other big one, and this is actually our most popular, is orthopedic injuries. So the orthopedic injuries that just everyday people like you and me have, but also the high-level injuries that professional athletes have. We're able to, in some cases, get athletes back in the game faster, sometimes avoid surgery or maybe prolong surgery long enough to get them through either a game or a season or extend their careers. So that is a main focus of what we do. That's where the most evidence globally is and some of the best results. And then the last bucket is something that we specialize in, something that sets us apart from almost every one of our competitors. And that's the treatment of spine and disc issues. So on the minimally invasive side with orthopedic spine and disc, so intradisc, intrafacet injections, but also spinal cord injuries. These are people that have the worst possible, acute or just traumatic injuries that have left them either quadriplegic or paraplegic.
Wow. Do you have any success stories you could talk about where maybe they received this therapy and were able to walk? I mean, something that drastic?
Yeah, actually we do. And this is where I love to get in debates with medical doctors in the States that affectionately, they are typically in somewhat of a right mindset in the sense that they say stem cells is the future of medicine, but it's not happening right now. And the debate I like to get in is to talk about the things that we are actually doing today, right now, stories that about what you're asking. And so I can give you one that resonates with me because we're friends at this point. But there was a guy named Dustin Bunch that was a firefighter in California. And like he did for 20 years prior, he went to Lake Havasu, Arizona with his family and his firefighter buddies. And he had a boat out there, probably multiple boats. And he dove off his boat like he did every year for 20 years. This time the water was very low. It was at night. He didn't see how shallow it was. And he had an immediate spinal cord injury. Now, he almost drowned because he was immediately paralyzed from the neck down. Luckily, he was there with his family and his friends that helped revive him and save him and airvac him to the nearest hospital. So he survived, but he had this terrible injury that he was told that he was never going to recover from. He was a big firefighter, big guy, 6'6", probably 240 pounds. And so the doctors told him that he would not only never walk again, but he was not even going to be able to be in a wheelchair or get out of bed ever again for his whole life because of how big he was and how severe the injury was. So I saw him on the very first time he came to Medellin for stem cell therapy. And I was in the hallway or the waiting room, and I was asking him, about his injury. And then that led into what his expectations for the stem cell therapy was. And now he was driving with a blower. He only had control of his mouth and his chin and his head. So he was driving his wheelchair with his neck, essentially. And he kind of looked at me in a real heartfelt way and kind of teary-eyed way. He said, I just had a baby daughter, my first kid. I would really love to be able to hold her again. And, there's another piece that, I wouldn't have thought about, but there's this real lack of dignity that you have with this injury, because I have to ask my wife every time I need something to drink, or I have to ask her to feed me. And even worse, I have to ask her to take me to the bathroom every day. And he just said that that's a horrible way to live. So if I could get those things back, I would be, it would be, you know, 100% turnaround for me. And so I like telling the story because that was his first trip. He was, you know, moving the wheelchair with his mouth. Now he's pushing the wheelchair by himself. He's got a smaller wheelchair. He's holding his daughter. He's feeding himself. He's taking drinks, what he wants. And he has the other part of the dignity where, you know, he can use the bathroom by himself. So for him, it's a huge success. He's not out there walking. You know, he's still a big guy with a terrible injury. So he is in the chair, but that's an amazing result. Now, guys with lesser injuries, we have had some mobility in their lower extremities. So they're out there kind of walking again.
So how quickly does it work once they get the therapy? Is it something they have to keep coming back for?
Yeah, with that type of injury, and that's the worst injury you can possibly have on the entire planet. There's nothing worse, more or less. So that one, no, it takes a while. Our protocol has him coming back, him, he or she, or whoever has the injury, coming back multiple times over at least a year period, if not longer. And I have to say that it's not just the stem cell therapy. It is other modalities that you stack on top of the stem cell therapy. Physical therapy is as important, more important than stem cell therapy. So physical therapy and stem cell therapy together are, when those two are combined, it's accelerated by light years. And so those are the two main modalities, but it takes a long time and a lot of hard work.
And how do they find you? How are people finding you?
This is, I mean, look, we're very blessed that a lot of professional athletes have come to us. They've been very vocal about their success on their social media. So I think that a lot of people are, you know, hearing their favorite football player, their MMA fighter in the UFC, or soccer player internationally. They're hearing those guys talk about us. And so we're blessed for that. But it's almost criminal in the sense that this is the technology that is helping people. It's getting to the systemic root cause. So it's really a bad business model, Jennifer, if you think about it. I really only want to treat people once and never see them again. And in spinal cord injuries and autoimmune disease, that might not be the case. We might have to treat multiple times. But in a lot of cases, it's a one and done treatment. So it's not like pharmacological model where we're just going to try to prescribe you something every day, every week, every month for the rest of your life. And it's not surgery that may cause other complications. Now, both pharmaceuticals and surgery are miracles and they're necessary. I just think that they should be prescribed as a last result instead of a first line of defense. And so what I'm getting to with your question is that I think it's almost criminal that we are not able to advertise in the United States because the US FDA and FTC have decided that this is not quite legal yet because it hasn't gone through the 20-25 year clinical trial process. Even though it has been proven safe, there's no debate in the scientific community. It is safe and effective for many indications, not all, but we're not allowed to advertise. So I can't do a Facebook ad, a Google ad, a YouTube page. My YouTube page is shadow banned right now. We used to get hundreds of thousands of views. Now, all of a sudden, we put Chuck Liddell or Rampage Jackson or Jim McMahon, former quarterback of the Chicago Bears, or Grant Cardone, who's one of our patients. These guys talk about us and have millions and millions of followers, and we get like zero views. So advertising is tough.
That's BS, especially since the COVID shot was passed with what?
Crazy.
I don't know, 90, it's definitely less than 90 days, wasn't it? I don't remember.
Operation Warp Speed. It's Operation Warp Speed for some companies out there, just not mine.
So that means, just like crypto and other things that used to be like that, they wanted to be regulated and make money from it or something. You would know more than me, but they're probably waiting until they can get their hands in it.
I'm okay with that. We want that. That's fine. Get regulated. Charge us some money. Let us pay more taxes and not have to take my company offshore. My American-based company, my U.S.-based company out of Scottsdale, Arizona, has to go offshore and treat our U.S.-based patients offshore because it's not available in the U.S. Charge me. I pay my taxes. I'm happy to be regulated. Just give me the guidelines and I'll follow them. But now they're withholding the guidelines, I think intentionally, because there's other factions out there that this would dent the pipeline, because it would put Americans and people in general in the mindset of being preventative and not just getting addicted to pills, or not just doing a surgery and completely replacing something that might actually be able to regrow on its own and maybe be replaced in 20 years instead of now.
Right. I agree. I know I've definitely heard podcasts. I don't know who, but they definitely use stem cells in blind mice, for example, to see if it could, you know, they could see again. I think they could. I don't know if they've tried that in humans yet. Maybe they said they did, but I mean, I've listened to some really cool things, or even how it can like rejuvenate your skin and make you look younger.
Yeah, I'm 93 and I've been using it for years. So
your skin
no,
looks
we,
great. I was
thank
gonna
you.
ask you.
We do a lot of skin rejuvenation for our clients as well.
Oh, really? I need to come down for that.
No. Maybe in 20 years.
Thank you. Going back to autoimmune therapy, I was curious. So is that something, because I've read a lot of that too, from Lyme's disease, which I believe is autoimmune. I could be wrong, but it going up in the United States and other autoimmune diseases. And I often wonder if that's from the vaccine shots, or what is your opinion on why that's happening here?
Well, I think there's a couple of questions there. So when you bring up Lyme's disease, that is a very, very tough disease to get to the root cause and really start systemically treating. And typically it's misdiagnosed for many, many years. So we have treated Lyme's patients with a great deal of success, but I've got to give the disclaimer here is that they, most all of them did not only do stem cell therapy. They were also doing a whole host of other things to try to rid themselves of this disease. So stem cell therapy is a component to getting some success in alleviating Lyme's, but it's not the only thing. To your other point, we are also treating and seeing a lot of complications from vaccines and pharmaceuticals. So I don't want to just put it all on vaccines,
sure.
But we had a clinical trial going for the treatment of ADRS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, which was one of the main causes of mortality during right in the middle of COVID, when you know there's a lot of uncertainty. We've had a lot of patients that have come to us with long haul, COVID long haul symptoms that we've had a remarkable success alleviating some of the symptoms. It's not a treatment for long haul. It's not a treatment for COVID related symptoms. However, there are some of them in there that are more inflammatory in nature that stem cells work remarkably with. So it's certainly something I would look into if any of your listeners, have those symptoms. And then also my other point was about the pharmaceuticals. There's a lot of people that have the antibiotic either resistance or some type of major complications because of pharmaceuticals. Stem cells in some cases are a really good treatment modality to help reverse some of those symptoms.
It's so interesting to me. How much is something like this? I assume insurance doesn't cover it.
Unfortunately, not yet. I mean, I don't know why. The thing is that big insurance and big pharma, they control the medical system in the United States. So, when those two are tied together, your guess is as good as mine. And I don't think this is a conspiracy podcast, so I'll leave my opinion out. But it is not covered by insurance yet. It would actually save them a lot of money. The insurance companies are the most profitable business in the world. They probably profit more if they implemented stem cell into their programs, but it's very expensive for the common person. And that is one of my goals, is to get the price reduced. The problem is when I started this business, I thought we were going to be able to reduce the price and get this to as many people as possible. And what I found is what you see happening in the United States a lot. And that's that there's a lot of practitioners out there that are just not even educated on what they're selling and what they're applying. And they're using this term stem cell, and they're purchasing, what I call garage sale stem cells, from a laboratory that they ship across the city or the state, and they just, they inject, and they're trusting that this laboratory has done a good job. And they may have done a good job, but what they don't know is that once you ship those, even if they're the best cells in the world, once you ship them out of the controlled environment of the laboratory and then across the city and across the state and across the country, and in some cases, you see these labs or these clinics in Tijuana that are injecting cells that are shipped from Boston, and the cells lose viability within the first hour. So by the time they're, they've been outside of the controlled environment for an hour or 2 hours, 3 hours, they're dead. Those cells are dead. and now they're not doing much of anything. There's still some limited results because there's the lubrication of joints and there's some growth factors that might help stimulate some repair, but really it's very low level. But the point I'm getting back to your question is that it is very expensive to do it the right way. And so when you see these, you know, these Stein spinners out there saying, come in and get the stem cells and, you know, come to my doctor's office, they might be less expensive, but you get what you pay for. And it's still very expensive to administer. So our treatments are right around the $25,000, $30,000 range.
Wow. Are there payment plans?
Yes, for sure. And when I say 25, 30,000, that's for our full body package. So that's a complete large systemic dose IV for total rejuvenation, anti-inflammatory stimulation of repair, and also immune modulation, as well as multiple joints. So if you're a professional athlete and you have every joint that's really beat up and you want to do your face and your hair and also a systemic IV, that'll probably cost you 25 or 30,000. If you're just coming in to do a joint, you know, maybe 10,000 or so.
That sounds amazing. I want to be an athlete to be like, I want the works.
Well, regular people can do it too. It's just not inexpensive. And,
right.
You know, and if you're not depending on your body and your family is not depending on your body, then typically we don't see, you know, a lot of people doing everything.
Sure. Are there things to come in, say, like 10, 20 years that you think stem cell therapy will assist with? I don't know, maybe cancer or...
Yeah, there's some really interesting therapies called CAR T therapy that is a cancer related gene editing, gene therapy. In stem cells, there are some great universities and laboratories that are experimenting with 3D printing. So 3D printing of vital organs using stem cell therapy. So starting with this cell with 3D printer, you know, potentially in the future, 3D printing a new heart and implanting that. We're not there yet, but there's some remarkable research in there. Our company has a pretty robust pipeline in advanced cell therapy. So there's NK cells, which you know are thought to be a potential life a longevity treatment, eliminating free radicals. And without getting too nerdy, that's one of the things in the future. We've just launched a new product called exosomes. It's an extracellular vesicle that's secreted by the stem cell. So that's exciting, and that's happening right now. And there's many others in the future.
And I know we're running out of time, but Exomes, the product, is that something that we can buy in the US?
You can buy it from other providers. I would be very wary about, there's a couple of educational pieces. So there's some really good companies out there that are selling really good exosomes. The problem is that if you have somebody that is coming to your office to give you an IV, or they're just doing it in your local general physician's office, and they don't have scientific prowess, they don't have a PhD, they don't have a laboratory on site, I would stay clear, because exosomes are still somewhat volatile. You need to have a very specific thawing protocol after those exosomes are shipped, and they should be shipped at a very specific temperature and stored at a very specific temperature and then reactivated so that you can inject them and have the benefit.
Okay. So is that something we can see on your website?
On our website, you'll see the representation that we use our exosomes along with our mesenchymal stem cells to treat at our facility in Medellin. We have not started promoting the sale of exosomes outside of our clinic. But yeah, keep an eye on us. We'll be out there soon.
That's why I was helping you with Intros to Restore. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Yep. Got it.
Absolutely.
I got it. Okay, thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate you being on my podcast, and I wish you luck in all of your future endeavors.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, that's it for now. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Please reach out to me so I can feature you on my show. I do respond to everyone. You can find me on my Instagram at Jennifer Sherlock or my business Instagram at JennaCom. And check out our new website coming soon, livewithoutanet.com. Thanks again, and I look forward to taking risks with you.